Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the vibrant parade of democracy. Here at the Media Research Center, we march virtually every day in challenging the partisan messaging of the national media. We make democracy better. Conservatives getting out there, sharing our viewpoint, makes it better. Democracy dies in darkness if the press doesn't get challenged for its own biases, for its own bubble. And right now, they're plenty biased in reporting on the sad demise of the Democratic Voting Rights Bill, their gambit on so-called voter suppression. ABC, CBS, and NBC all covered the so-called For the People Act last night. It got stuck in a 50-50 vote when they needed 60 votes to proceed with the debate on the floor. A couple days ago, MRC's Rich Noyes told us that these networks gave less than 3 minutes combined to this bill up until recently, which suggests they knew it was doomed. Everybody can count. Reporters can count, too. The network people seem very well acquainted with Democratic thinking, and their news judgment and Democratic thinking can sometimes be exactly the same thing. The idea that they'd only given 3 minutes to this was a suggestion that it was doomed. Why wouldn't they give this bill a large bucket of stories if they thought it had a chance? So once the bill actually failed, they used puffy positive words to describe it. ABC called it both a sweeping election reform bill and a sweeping voting rights bill. Does it always sound marvelous? It's sweeping, all right. It was going to sweep away any requirement for a voter ID. Nick Night Train Fondacaro made a good point last night that all these networks made the Democrat bill sound like it had nothing controversial in it. They just larded you up with stuff that sounded good. ABC anchor David Muir, the pompadour, the largest hair on a TV set in America, said the bill would have, among other things, made Election Day a federal holiday, making it easy for Americans to get to the polls. It would have required at least 15 consecutive days of early voting. It also placed limits on partisan gerrymandering. And no lines that are critical. No banning voter ID requirements. No federal funding of elections. No federal supervision of elections. Sometimes they do this as Republicans say. But instead of saying the Democrats say, they just, whatever the Democrats say is what the news is. ABC reporter Rachel Scott mentioned voter ID for like 2 seconds without any context. Senator Joe Manchin voted with his fellow Democrats after they added some amendment I don't understand. Something about voter ID, but they basically threw in the words voter ID in passing. But here again, Rachel Scott repeated this line. The legislation would make Election Day a federal holiday, require at least 15 consecutive days of early voting, and limit partisan gerrymandering. It's the same list that David Muir had already spewed. Oh, but she added, it comes as Republicans in 15 states enact tough new voting restrictions. Have you ever considered when somebody asks you for an ID, this is a tough restriction? I want to buy a six-pack of beer. Would you show me your ID? Oh, that's a tough drinking restriction. But this is the language they use. Over on the CBS Evening News, anchor Nora O'Donnell used the usual partisan lingo. Democrats expand rights. Republicans restrict rights. Tough voting restrictions. Nora reported, a Democratic plan to greatly expand voting rights in the U.S. failed tonight in the U.S. Senate. Democrats didn't come close to the 60 votes they needed to advance debate. Voter ID never came up in the story by reporter Nicole Killian. She did have, like ABC, the usual advertising lingo.
The bill would expand automatic voter registration and early voting, end partisan gerrymandering, and make Election Day a national holiday. But Senate Democrats were unable to secure the 60 votes required to overcome a Republican filibuster.
This is all about one thing. Some people don't want some people to vote.
The push for a federal voting rights law comes as 48 states are considering nearly 400 Republican-backed bills that would restrict voting. Across the South, grassroots activists organized freedom rides like those during the civil rights movement, concerned the proposals could again make it harder for people of color at the ballot box.
It's Jim Crow 2.0.
CBS just put that lying junk in there, that somehow the Republicans are pushing Jim Crow 2.0. This is just an outrage. We are sick of this baloney. Earth to CBS. It's the Democrats who are the party of Jim Crow 1.0. And there is no voting bill in any state that's going to reimpose segregation, you silly partisans. They know this is a lie. At best, this is a kooky conspiracy theory. They can run around and boast about themselves and claim they expose kooky conspiracy theories. They just stand for the facts. But this is a kooky conspiracy theory. It's a nutball line that all Republicans are the modern-day Bull Connor and George Wallace and Orville Faubus. They just know it helps to scare minority voters into turning out at the polls. It worked in 2020. It's a useful lie. You don't get to stand up and say you're for facts and truth and then put Jim Crow 2.0 in a soundbite. Scott Whitlock was in Costco and picked up the Costco Connection magazine because Norah O'Donnell was on the cover. And inside she speaks about how, oh, CBS is CBS. We're so neutral and interested in facts and truth. Fact check, false. NBC also puffed the Democrat bill, but at least they accurately pointed out it prevents states from requiring voter ID. I mean, again, they cast that as a Republican talking point, but it's in there. A fair and balanced story could say the Democrats say they like it for this reason, and the Republicans don't like it for this reason. That's the way it should be done. Garrett Hake described the For the People Act as includes a requirement states provide same-day voter registration, sets up a public financing system for congressional elections, and requires presidential candidates to release their tax returns. We know who that's aimed at. Democrats calling the bill a way to push back against new state voting laws passed by the Republicans. Well, Garrett Hake didn't use the word restrictions. It's a little shocking. Then he added, but Republicans tonight slamming the bill as a partisan power grab by Democrats that would federalize elections, including preventing states from requiring voter ID. So Garrett Hake was the best of the night, which I suppose is a rather low bar. He also allowed the notion of cheating. He ran a soundbite from Senator John Kennedy, who said in the soundbite, could be more aptly described as the Screw the People Act. It will make it much easier to cheat in an election. You kind of got to like that cornpone thing. But maybe NBC would use a clip like that because they think this is sort of a nice cartoonish Republican image. But hey, Republicans like Senator John Kennedy. This is a better John Kennedy than the other John Kennedy. PBS anchor Judy Woodruff, this is my own personal approach. I always have to look at PBS and NPR. Judy Woodruff had an interview with Senator John Thune. And she had to, of course, make this all about how Republicans are against voting access.
What we know is going on, and voting rights groups have pointed this out, that you now have a number of state legislatures, Republican-controlled, around the country that are trying to tighten and deny access to voters based on the false claim that the 2020 election was fraudulent, that actually President Trump won. We know that is not true, so why not try to take steps that will undo a falsehood?
It's somehow mandatory at taxpayer-funded PBS to tie any attempt at election integrity into what they call the big lie that Trump won. Trump didn't win. But how does this work? The idea that somehow you can undo a falsehood by banning a voter ID requirement and other Democrat wish list items. Judy's really implying that the Republicans are falsehood enablers as the media shovel this smelly Jim Crow garbage. And National Public Radio? Well, let's just briefly give you the DNC PR flavor of the headlines on their website. On last night's All Things Considered newscast, more like Some Things Considered, Only Liberal Things Considered, the evening news headline was, quote, nearly 500 state legislators signed letter pleading Congress to pass For the People Act. Really? Let's guess which party the nearly 500 begging state legislators belongs to. They interviewed a state rep from Texas who they identified as a Democrat. Then on today's morning edition, the headline is, quote, President Biden says the fight over voting rights is far from over, unquote. This is also sort of the line you're seeing on screen at MSNBC today. NPR, MSNBC, CNN, PBS, ABC, CBS, NBC. They're all one uniform publicity machine for the Democratic Party. We'll have more after this.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
We're back on the Newsbusters podcast, and we're doing something sort of special. My guest is my son, Benjamin Graham, who is also the producer of this podcast. And the reason we decided to do this today was because a lot of times Ben is running around D.C., Maryland, and Virginia with a camera, taking video of breaking news events. And yesterday it was happening in Ashburn, Virginia, in Loudoun County, where they've been having a rather fervent debate about the schools teaching critical race theory. This isn't the first time that the MRC TV crew has gone up to Loudoun County, because this has been going on for a while. What did you find on the scene yesterday, Benjamin?
Well, Father, it's very nice to be here. I'm going to try to...
You're always here. You're just not in here.
No, but in here. But like, I'm going to try to treat it like our commute chats and not get all up in my head. But all of these events kind of play to the same beat. So, because I've also gone to Fairfax, I did Prince William County stuff, and it's same topics. It's always about the child gender rights. You know, my 6-year-old is allowed to declare what their gender is, even though they're not entirely sure what their gender is in general. As we all know, kids can be very confused about what genitalia even is.
Yeah.
But it all plays to the same sort of pattern where people want to show off their virtue and their compassion and.
Well, in this case, you're talking about school board officials seem to be the ones promoting this. You're covering it basically when parents come to protest.
Well, yeah. Well, but it's not just the parents coming to protest. It's also because when I'm talking about the pattern, I'm talking about the how the left handles it. So yes, a lot of times these school boards are majority held by liberal seats, even though they would probably try to tell you that, no, we're not, you know, we're here for the kids. It's not for our ideology.
Right.
It's like, no, the your ideology is what you're trying to impress upon kids. It's not, it's the, but so we do try to talk to parents who are there protesting to get their voice out there, because, you know, they're of course they're going to try to go to the school board and be ignored. Frankly, they are ignored. I mean, last night, they ended early.
Right.
There were still more people who wished to speak, and the board members, cowards, all of them, were like, no, this isn't in our favor. We're done. We're not going to listen to you anymore.
So I guess part of the reason that we were interested in covering this was it was being reported that the progressives in this controversy were busing in supporters of their point of view, which made the critical parents, you know, mass more people. I want to say I looked at the newspaper reports on this today, and I guess they had a list of 250 people that wanted to speak, and that could go on forever. We did a couple of years ago, my wife and I attend a less contentious Fairfax school board meeting that was about school boundaries. It wasn't really an ideological thing. But what you learn about these, in my opinion, was a lot of people get up and say the same thing. So you could say, I think we've heard everything. But if you're one of the people that don't get to speak, you certainly feel like you were deprived of your right to speak citizen.
If you register, I mean, that's usually, I mean, a lot of times, you know, they have the registered speakers and the speakers get to speak. The meeting goes on.
I guess their excuse yesterday was that they lack decorum, that speakers, the conservative speakers, would get up and say feisty things and they would get a bunch of rousing applause. And
that's freedom of speech, buddy. I hate to break it to you.
Well, but that was their excuse. Like, this is turning into a political rally that we don't like.
Well, I mean, hey, if it was just a big line of people going like, genitalia doesn't matter, woo! I mean, it's...
So you said yesterday that... Real quick about
the busing. So we actually, now I can't confirm this because the rumor has it,
yes,
that they were intending to bus people in. But the unfortunate thing is for them is that the turnout for the buses was catastrophically low.
Well, that doesn't make the paper.
The rumor is, and again, this is a grain of salt because I can't confirm it. But the rumor that I heard from a Fox News investigative reporter on the scene was that one of the buses had two individuals show up for the bus. You know, so that's not a, especially when you look at the ratio of right. people who were out there.
Right.
There's plenty of the lefty people, you know, the purple haired and the all of the trans and sexuality flags. They were there, but the group was much smaller than the concerned parents, and a lot of them weren't just there for the trans stuff. They were there for critical race theory, the stuff that's been debated widely, I mean, highlighted by people like Tucker and you know, other outlets,
right?
So I mean, it's a broader Loudoun County issue, but yes, the busing, because I just wanted to touch on that because we brought it up. It seemed like that was a catastrophic failure.
When there's the assumption that somehow there's going to be a big liberal turnout and then there isn't any, if there's going to be, I found this when we would go and cover the March for Life, that there would be tens of thousands of pro-lifers. And then there would be like 12 people on the Supreme Court steps who favored abortion. And the news media, if they covered the event at all, they were given equal heft. There was no real notion that one side was dramatically, vastly outnumbered. But I think where I was going was this whole notion of, you go to interview people and you're like, let's get both sides. And then the minute that the lefties get a sense that you're not what they would think is mainstream media, they don't want to talk to you.
Oh, all right. So again, this is the normal thing, and this is not just for the school board stuff. This is any protest I've been to. Like, I've been to May Day protests. I've been to, you know, rip down the statue protests. I've been to all sorts of protests, and the general thing is all of these people who are preaching kindness and compassion and love are some of the least kind people if you're not one of theirs.
Yeah.
So yes, we endeavor to be the fair version of media and journalism and try to get everybody
an opposing
involved.
View.
And hey, if people can present a decent argument, you know, we're not against putting it up there as a point of contention, like, hey, maybe we need to come up with a better argument. But that's never the case. It's people are either kind of kooky or they're too smart to go on camera. I mean, there's that. But the thing that's most frustrating is when one person figures out who we are, one person, and suddenly they go around and they follow us to tell everyone that we might try to talk to and go, these guys are conservatives. They're going to take you out of context. They're going to make you look stupid. And it's like, well, frankly, you might make yourself look stupid. That's right. What you're afraid of. It's not us making you look stupid or taking you out of context. You just sound like a nut, you know. But yes, they're terrified. They don't want to talk to us. They don't want to actually have their beliefs challenged. They want to spew amongst their friends and have the backing of a mass crowd. If it's a one-on-one conversation, they don't want to have it. They're afraid to have it because they don't want to have that confrontation that they can't win.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, you know, if we are out somewhere and a liberal outlet comes and says, you want to be interviewed, I mean, my natural tendency would be sure, and I would be contentious and whatnot, respectful but contentious. If the journalist was a liberal, I tend to enjoy something like that. But the fear that you'll be taken out of context is, that's real, and that we see it happen with conservatives.
Oh, and here's the thing, I don't blame people, because I, again, as somebody who cuts these videos, and you know, we are in a social media age, and the views is what sells, you know. And so, yes, you're going to go for the meatier bits. You're going to go for the funnier bits. You're going to go for the thing. Like, so, yes, not everything's going to be in context. It can't be in context, because if it was in context, you would have 3 to 4 hour videos that nobody would watch.
Yeah.
It's got to be digestible.
Right.
And so a lot of just a bunch of that is unavoidable. So again, this is why I said people are smart enough not to show up on camera, because I wouldn't do it, and not because I'm afraid to have the conversation. It's because I don't want to be in a position where something I said, because you know, I'm being very controlled here, but you know, my normal manner of speech is not normally
it's not always going to do well on social media for you.
Well, and also it might not always color me, like you know, especially if I'm in a more passionate moment, you know.
Well, we're all like that. I think that I think that everybody gets emotional and says things. Look, it's the same when you type up a tweet. It's like you got to look at it again and say, am I, or an attempt to be funny. I've stepped in it. Attempting to be funny on Twitter, and so there is that. I think it can be argued from your experience that the average everyday liberal who would turn up at an event like this doesn't have, and maybe this is unfair, but they don't seem to have actual debates in their own lives, so that they actually know how to take on whatever questions you're going to ask.
No.
And it's not that your questions are going to be completely loaded, like why are you a commie pig? It's no, going to say, please explain why you're here today.
Well, my thing always is like, I would love someone to explain to me in a way that would actually satisfy me how it is that giving into the delusion and encouraging people to maim themselves is more compassionate than telling them to accept the fact, like, you know, we want to talk about body positivity. Yeah. What's more body positive than saying, yes, I'm sorry.
I accept the body I'm in.
You were born a man. You are a man. And here's the thing. You know, I do have a mental health background, and the quotation, the mantra that I have learned is, you know, your feelings are real, but they're not reality.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I believe you when you say, I feel like I'm in the wrong body. I, you know, the whole BS about, you know, female brain in the male body, or, you know, vice versa.
Yeah.
I will grant you that, yes, you could feel that way. But to me, it is not kind to or compassionate to proceed to prop that up
and indulge and to, everything,
because here's the thing, is like, you know, another body dysmorphia, you don't talked to an anorexic person, someone who is unhealthily skinny, because for some reason in their brain they can look in a mirror and say, "Oh my gosh, I am fat." No one on this earth with any ounce, any sort of minute amount of care is going to say, "You know what? You're right. You could do to lose a few pounds. You are enormous.
I'm supportive of your identity or your own conception of your identity.
Please eat more paper."
Well, I think you're exactly right in this, and that is, you can have compassion for people's feelings. You can even respect their feelings and try to not to troll them. I'm not interested in using your real name you were born with or whatever that's one thing. What this is about in these cases, when you're having this debate in Northern Virginia in school board meetings, where it's about what you teach about these issues, that's where it becomes more of an issue. And I think the whole problem with LGBTQ education, just like LGBTQ debates in media, there aren't any.
Yeah,
there are no debates. It's all you must respect the lived experience of the LGBTQ people. You can't actually say that you disagree with any of their conceptions about anything. You certainly can't bring your Bible to the discussion. That's all basically forbidden. So I think that a lot of people get upset. I know that the last speaker in Loudoun basically said it's crazy to tell boys they're girls and to tell girls they're boys. And it's simply not factual. I mean, all of these people who try to say, we are the news media, we're all about facts, we're all about identifying truth and not gaslighting you. Well, when it comes to an issue like gender, you're casting a big cloud. I mean, the exception to that was this 60 Minutes piece recently where Leslie Sahl said, these people are miserable because everyone was too accepting, too quick to push them into getting a surgery. And then after they got the surgery, which they bizarrely call gender affirmation surgery or gender confirmation surgery. This is all the kind of strange Orwellian lingo the liberal media use. These people were more miserable. They were more depressed. And maybe they're not everyone that's transgender, but our news media and these education bureaucracies can't have any nuance. There's no nuance. There's no debate allowed. There's one orthodoxy, and everyone has to obey it.
Well, the sad thing here is, really the tragic part of this is that people will argue that the people who are trans and don't get the surgeries and the affirmation are committing suicide. But also the people who are going through the surgery to affirm this gender, supposedly, are also, I mean, it has a ridiculously high suicide rate. So, and they would say, oh, it's because no one accepts them and no one affirms them.
Right.
You know, like people, they get trolled and bullied. And it's like, I'm sorry. Like one, they have an entire armada of an ideology, of a political faction that supports them.
Right.
And if they were truly happy with themselves, this is the thing about confident people is that, yeah, you could have a mountain of haters and still survive and thrive. The fact of the matter is,
well, conservatives certainly have a mountain of haters that we're dealing with.
No, I mean, like, but this is my thing. It's like if they were totally comfortable and satisfied and you know, quote unquote, living their best life, you know, I don't think that a little trolling is going to be enough to throw them overboard. I think that there is a deeper issue on the mental scale that is not considered, that is almost brushed to the side in service to the political expediency that is, you know, propagating a victimhood status for transgender people.
Well, I just don't like the idea, you know. None of us want to be pro-suicide. None of us want our viewpoints to lead anyone down that path. But what I resent when I look at the media coverage on this, it's basically like, you need to line up with the transgender agenda because you're basically enabling suicide by disagreeing with us. That's the kind of thing that I don't like. And it's the sort of thing where they would say, we're the forces of your compassion and you're not. And you're not allowing us to have any compassion because you're denouncing us as killing people.
Well, and the thing that is often ignored, and something that I think the more savvy people who would argue this issue, rather than just the logical emotional side, is that this is becoming an issue of trampling on the freedom of people to speak and to have their religion, to have their beliefs. Because when you look at this, this transgender thing is becoming an orthodoxy in yep. that people are being forced to acknowledge someone's gender. They have to use their pronouns, you know, and that
even
and
if they're nonsense pronouns like Z, Zer, and Zim, Z's. I mean,
but I mean, that's a real danger here in that you are not only are you, you know, they talk about Christians and how, you know, you can't mandate your morals on people, but that's exactly what they're trying
that's
to do.
That's right. The orthodoxy is always there. This is important. I think we always have to acknowledge this, as they'll say, we've labored too long in this country for centuries under a patriarchy and an orthodoxy, and the Christians have run the culture and they've oppressed us all. And what we're in now is basically we're headed into a, this is not an era of liberation. It's not an era of freer speech. It's now there's a new orthodoxy, and you all have to be under our archy and our orthodoxy, and you have to speak our lingo and use our pronouns, and you're not allowed to disagree with us. It's just shifted. It's not like we're in a freer society now. It's just who's running the culture, I guess, is changing. I mean, you could see it. We're in Pride Month. Everybody's got a rainbow on their you know, the rainbow on the Golden Arches, a rainbow on Burger King, you know, everything's got a rainbow on it. And that sort of implies that corporations now are very woke. It's something that...
Well, depending on the country that their Twitter account's in.
Yeah, that's true. Now, I want to take one back before we end. I want to take it back to this whole notion of the critical race theory, because we've seen a lot of the media where they've kind of denied that this is even a thing. I mean, the Washington Post account of this Loudoun County school board debate said some speakers on Tuesday came to protest critical race theory, a decades-old academic framework that posits in part that racism is woven into the history of America and has helped shape its present-day institutions and systems. Well, again, that's misreporting on what critical race theory is. Nobody denies that the history of America has racism woven into it. What we're denying and what's not allowed in this story is that critical race theory teaches you that whites are all inherently guilty. You're all inherently guilty of systemic racism. When you're 6 years old, when you're a baby, you're inherently guilty. You all have white privilege. And that's what they're not really allowing in these in this reporting.
Yes. I mean, my quote is, if I may be momentarily based and offensive in my language, is like, I'm sorry, you've never been in chains and I've never held a whip. We're both born free people, you know, and this is to the you know the African American community that would say that, you know, this is all based on racism and slavery, and all of you are still holding on to the guilt as I am holding on to the suffering. And it's like, I think that's quite insulting to the people who actually suffered it, because it's like, you know, I don't think that you realize how charmed it is to be living in the present, where
in this country,
in the present, where, and especially now when you have, like, again, you have an entire political party that is doing its darndest to placate you at every turn. I mean, and you know, like, it comes into policy, it goes into all of the support for, you know, the trained Marxists at Black Lives Matter. You know, it is odd to me that you can grow up in a nation as free and as prosperous as America. You know, and this can't speak for everybody. Obviously, people have different backgrounds. They come from different parts of the nation. And,
sure.
And some of those parts of the nations are not conducive to having a positive experience.
Right.
But it does lack a perspective of thinking beyond your current situation. And also, part of it is there is a culture surrounding this that wants people to suffer, that wants people to be in a place where they feel like, you know, I mean, it's funny. They talk about how Democrats are going to be their allies, and, you know, a bunch of these Democrats are white people who want to be saviors. You know, it's like,
and then they get criticized for being
you
saviors.
You need rich old white people to save you. It's like, no, you don't.
see the column I did in Tom Hanks. Oh, I'm a famous Hollywood actor, and I think we should all teach the Tulsa race riot. Stop your white saviorism.
Well, like here's the thing: it's like, which one is more racist or offensive? The idea that I believe that every African American, any minority individual, is utterly capable of doing everything that I can, and
especially they can get a driver's license.
They can get
voter
a driver's
ID.
License. Well, I mean, again, so I always go back to, there's an old Amy Horowitz video where he went to New York, and first he talked to all these college liberal white people, and said, you know, why is voter ID racist? And it is the stuff like, well, they don't know how to get to the DMV. They don't know how to use the internet. You know, and so he goes then to just, you know, average black people on the streets of New York and asks, like, do you know how to use the internet? And a woman's like, I use my phone as a hotspot. You know, I know where my library is if I really didn't have a computer at home. You know, and a lot of people are like, yeah, that's just ignorance. Like, yes, it is. But this is the ideology that is being taught, where it is black people are so disadvantaged that they can't access the same infrastructure that we can. And it's just nonsense. It is a you know, the soft bigotry of low expectations.
There you go. Now you're quoting George W. Bush. Yeah. You made this point, but it did amuse me. The Washington Post story on this meeting, the story ended with school board chair Brenda Sheridan, who is clearly a liberal Democrat. But she said, efforts to convert the county into a political battleground rather than a place of learning will ultimately fail. These politically motivated antics ought to end, she said, referencing the recent unrest. Well, it's funny they use the word unrest. If they don't, know that they won't delay our work. So this is the way liberals always love to talk, which is like, you're politicizing things by coming in and protesting all the liberal stuff we're doing. We weren't politicizing it. It wasn't ideological before. Now suddenly when you come and you protest critical race theory or gender theory, you're making it political.
Well, you know it's political when you have the liberal media that when it does get out of hand and not looking good for you, that it's just fiery but peaceful.
Yeah, I just think the word unrest here is funny because you can watch it on video. There's people basically standing and applauding, and maybe they yelled. Usually when they use the word unrest, it means some building burned down. Yeah. That's usually the way they define unrest, where they stand in front of a fire and say it's mostly peaceful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I think that's the greatest evidence you have that it's political, because when it starts to look bad, you got to downplay it.
Yeah. Well, this is what we do at Newsbusters, trying to explain to people how the controversies of our time get described. They get painted. The messaging is intense. Come and see what we've got once, twice, 24 times a day.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening.